This is Confessions of a Book Collector. I'm your host, David Headley, and I will be exploring all aspects of publishing and book collecting, interviewing best-selling and upcoming authors, and sharing insights on books both old and new. Welcome back to Confessions of a Book Collector. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by a debut author for a book that I read about a year ago and completely fell in love with. And the author is called Jenny Godfrey, who is a delight too.
Oh, thank you so much, David. And thank you for asking me to be on the podcast, because I am definitely a book person first and a writer second. So it's a privilege to be on a podcast talking about books in general, as well as my own.
I know that you're a book person, because don't you work in a bookshop now and again?
I do indeed, yes. So I work in Waterstones in Taunton.
We love Waterstones.
I work there during the kind of the busy periods, basically, when I'm not writing.
Do you enjoy it?
I love it. So I decided to work in Waterstones because I wanted to understand how that part of the book business worked. So I'd already started writing. And so it was intended to be for one Christmas. It's been 4 years now, because I found I absolutely love the job of a bookseller.
Well, I think that being a bookseller, because that's my first and only love, I think, is being a bookseller. Mm. I love it. I love reading something and telling people how brilliant it is. And that moves me swiftly on to talk about The List of Suspicious Things, which is your debut novel. It's published next month in February, though this podcast is going to go out in February. So the book is out now. Go and buy it. It's brilliant. It is about a young girl called Mavis, who we know as Miv. And she is in Yorkshire. She lives with her mum and dad and her aunt. And she has a best friend called Sharon. And they together want to try to understand the world better.
Yes.
And it is amazing. Because at the same time, it's 1979. Margaret Thatcher is the Prime Minister. I wasn't a fan. And there's a person going around killing women, the Yorkshire Ripper.
Yes.
Though it isn't really about the Yorkshire Ripper in the true sense. You handle that beautifully, and the victims are done with the utmost care. It is amazing. Your writing is fresh. The voice is amazing. I can't remember the last time I sat down and read a book in one go. And as I was saying to you earlier, it was one of those books that was sent to me and I sat down to read it and then I finished it in one go and thought, wow, that is completely amazing. I have to do something with this book, which you didn't know.
I didn't know. And I am sort of a bit speechless now, because I don't know whether you know this or not, David, but Goldsborough in particular is hashtag author goals. And you were definitely, you know, kind of on my radar as one of my far-flung ambitions for the book was to be a Goldsborough book. And so to hear this is just amazing. Thank you.
Well, no, thank you for writing it. How long did it take you to write? And did you, let's talk about your writing career. Did you always want to be a writer?
So my writing career is very short. It started in 2020. But I did always want to be a writer, yes. So I was a very, very bookish child. And if you'd asked me what I wanted to be when I was 7 or 8, I actually would have said an authoress, because I was really obsessed with the word authoress. And I loved Enid Blyton. And I loved The Secret Garden by Frances Hodgson Burnett. And that was the book that made me realise that Yorkshire people could be in books, which I hadn't realised before that.
Not down pit.
Yeah, exactly. But life got in the way. And, you know, I come from a background very similar to Miv's. Very working class family. Everybody worked in the mills. And being a writer wasn't for people like me in my mind. So I gave up on the dream at some point in the quest to earn a living. And I didn't come back to it until 2019. And then I wrote the book in 2020. And it took me, please don't hate me, all writers listening. It took me 5 months to write. And then I got an agent. And then it took another year to edit. So the extra year to edit was one of the toughest things I've ever done, but one of the best things I've ever done. Thank you, Nell Andrew, my agent.
This is amazing. I love Nell. But so it took you a year to edit.
Yes.
Did you enjoy that process?
I really, really did. And I've thought about this, about why I loved it. And I think one of the reasons I loved it so much was because I really knew I knew very little. So any editorial guidance I got, I was hungry for it. And I could often, in fact, all the time, really see how it would make the book better. I'm a chronic underwriter. So the draft that Nell signed me on was 67,000 words.
Wow.
The book is now 105,000 words. And that's down to Nell basically repeating over and over again, more, more, more.
It's funny because I didn't read it in the physical form. I was sent the manuscript by your wonderful editor. And so I read it on my Kindle. And you don't know how many pages you're reading on a Kindle.
No.
It felt quite short too.
I know,
It's such a page turner. So that's remarkable to me because I hadn't even thought about what the page, the extent of the book would be. It's remarkable to me that it's that long.
Yeah, it's a chunky book. Yeah.
It didn't feel like that. Anyway, it is amazing. So Miv came to you just easily because you said that she similar background to you. So
yes.
You all, in your mind, how she quickly formed? I mean, it took you 5 months to write this book.
So every time I tell this story, I start by saying, look, it sounds woo-woo, but this is what happened to
That's
me.
A Yorkshire term. Or yeah. Woo-woo. We say that in Yorkshire.
It does sound that way, but this is what actually happened to me. So I began writing a psychological thriller because that's what everyone was reading. And after 20,000 words, I abandoned it because it was terrible. And the reason it was terrible, the words were in the right order and I had a plot, but it had no heart. I could see and feel that it just wasn't breathing. That's the best way I can describe it, really. So I abandoned it, listened during the course of a day to Stephen King's On Writing.
Amazing.
Yeah. Went for a walk with the dog. While I was on that walk, the plot and title, the list of suspicious things, appeared in my brain. That is what happened. And that's the only way I can describe it. And I practically ran home, started writing immediately, not the actual words, but capturing what I'd seen. And maybe it was middle of the afternoon that happened. I didn't stop writing until quite late into the night. And I sent it to a friend who I trust and said, am I onto something here? Is this a good idea? And she wrote back and said, it's a good idea. Write it. And the rest of the time was me kind of filling in the blanks of this thing I'd seen in my head, including the title, that has never changed.
It is incredible. And it is full of heart. It's what I look for in a book. I want a story that I can really feel and believe in. And that's what you give us as readers. That's why I've chosen it as my premier book of the month. It's going to be my premier.
I'm so thrilled.
And we're doing this amazing special edition with the crows. And I don't know if you saw on Twitter the other day, there was two crows sitting on my table. They're for our window display that we're going to do with your book.
I did not see that. That's so cool.
Because I tweeted an attempted murder.
I need to go and copy that. That's so cool.
I think I'm funny. Anyway, but I bought these two crows to go in the window with your book, because honestly, I'm slightly obsessed with your book. Do you want to pitch it to the listener? Do you want to tell them in your own words what your book is?
Sure. So as you said, the main character is Miv. She's 12 years old. Her home life isn't the best. Money is tight. Her mum is ill in a way that she can't quite understand. Margaret Thatcher's just become Prime Minister, as you've said. And there's this undercurrent of fear caused by the murders. And Miv's dad makes the threat of moving the family down south. Now, for any northerner, that is a fate worse than death. And so Miv decides that in order to make Yorkshire safe again, she is going to solve the mystery of the murders. And she recruits her best friend, Sharon. And they make a list of all the things that they see and find suspicious in their very small town. And they investigate them one by one. But in doing so, they uncover all the secrets of their small town, but also find the power of connection in the most unusual of places.
Thank you. That's a perfect pitch.
Thank you so much. I have practiced that pitch, can you tell?
No, but you did it beautifully.
Thank you.
And it, as I said also when we were off microphone, that one of the things I find remarkable is how you took me back to my childhood, because I grew up in Yorkshire too, not far from Leeds and Batley, but I'm from York and
posh Yorkshire.
Well, you see, people say that.
It is.
It's really not. I came from a very, very, very working class background. But it's certainly not posh where I was. But what's so remarkable is I remember everyone knowing everybody's business in my little street. And we didn't lock the door. And we ate those sweets and we had coins and we used telephone boxes. I would never let a telephone box door ever shut on me, because I once watched a horror movie and the door never shut behind me ever. I used to keep my leg kicked out so that the door would never shut. I was, anyway, I won't go into that too much, but it did remind me of my childhood in York. And I suppose that's why I love this book so much, because you remember things that I'd forgotten, and that it literally took me back to my childhood. It's so beautifully written.
Thank you so much. And I mean, I do have a great memory for such things, but I was also very helped by, so one of the things that I think was working at my subconscious before the book appeared in my mind was watching the Yorkshire Ripper Files. It's a BAFTA award-winning documentary on the BBC, 4 parts, all about the hunt for the Yorkshire Ripper, except it wasn't. It was about the time, the place, what it was like. And I remember watching it and, like you've described, being transported to this childhood that I so rarely think about. And it, I guess that triggered a lot of memories coming back. But I did also wallpaper my study with pictures from the 1970s, and I went method. And I only played 1970s music as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Just to get you into the mood?
Yeah.
So do you listen to music while you write?
I don't, no. But any other time, I would only listen to 1970s music. And that, for me, was one of the biggest hooks, because I remember sitting in the back of my dad's brown Cortina listening to the Carpenters and John Denver, and that created even more memories, or opened up even more memories.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was 1979, I was 6, so I would say I don't have huge memories of that time, but I do remember having my chopper, and I remember my yes. I loved my chopper. I used to go bird watching a lot when I was probably 6-7 years old. I used to just disappear. In those days, it did feel safe, but I do remember yes. the Yorkshire Ripper, and I do remember that the whole of Yorkshire wasn't just Leeds, because he started to leave Leeds and he'd go to Bradford and he yeah. killed the ladies there. And then I think people started to worry about where he was going, because then he went to Manchester, didn't he?
Yes.
If you don't know about the Yorkshire Ripper, you don't need to know anything about that for this book. This is really not about the Yorkshire Ripper, this novel. It is really about a young girl growing up and coming to terms with her teenage years, really, and her family. Yeah. It's yeah. amazing.
And it's about community. And it is, I mean, I there's an author's note in the front that talks about it being my love letter to Yorkshire. And it really is. It's a love letter to a place and time, but without being rose-tinted nostalgia around it. There's plenty of nostalgia in it, but I hope I've reflected the light and the dark.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, it's one of my favourite books I've read for ages.
Oh, I can't tell you how amazing it is to hear that from you. Seriously.
And I was at a party with your publisher on Monday evening, and I was talking to a couple of people there, and they're all so excited about this book. They literally are so excited about this book.
They are amazing. And I have said to them on more than one occasion, and I think it's true, they care as much as I do about the success, or what they really care about, and I'm sure they care about the success in the background, but is getting it into readers' hands, which is something they're doing a brilliant job at. But I couldn't ask for a better publisher for doing exactly that, getting it into readers' hands.
We talk about word of mouth, and I have to say, on social media, I've seen more people talk about this book than I have seen anything else. So I think that word of mouth is going to spread.
I really hope so.
Anyway, we won't jinx anything.
Let's touch wood somewhere.
So where are you going next? I mean, obviously this book is now published this month, but are you taking a break? Are you currently writing? Have you got ideas?
I'm currently writing very, very slowly in comparison to how I wrote The List of Suspicious
Really?
Things. Yes. There's lots of reasons for that, but in particular one of expectation. And I mean expectation of me on me. And I had a few false starts, although they may end up being false starts that get pulled out of the drawer again at a future date. But I am now settled on an idea and a story, and I've written about 20,000 words, and I'm now on track. Like, I know what it's going to be, what it's going to look like, and that is really exciting.
And you're not going to say anything more than that?
Well, I am, actually. So it's set in the north again. It's called Wakey, as in Wakefield.
Right.
And it is set around a fictional crime this time. So it's a missing girl who disappeared in the early 2000s. And it's about the impact of her disappearance on three individuals and how they come to terms with finding out what happened to her.
Wow. It's quite different.
Yes and no, in that it is still an exploration of the impact of crime on a community.
Right.
But it's probably darker, I'd say, than The List of Suspicious Things.
Good. I think. Good. 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 We like dark things. So let's go back to your childhood, because you talked about how books influenced you when yes. You wanted to be an authoress. You've mentioned Enid Blyton, and
The Secret Garden.
Thank you. What other books influenced you? And have you always been a big reader? And of course, you must love books because you work in a bookstore.
Yeah, So I loved books as a kid so much. My mum took me to the doctor to say, that she felt like I wasn't sleeping enough and that I was reading too much. And the doctor, I can remember him, Dr. McCormick, he was called. He laughed like uproariously and said to my mum, "This is the first child ever brought to me for reading too much." I used to have, you know, like all kids there, and I used to have a torch under the blankets, reading, reading, reading. And Enid Blyton, yeah, she was my gateway drug. But I did, as I started to get into my teens, Fahrenheit 451, which makes an appearance in the list of suspicious things, turned my world on its head. And I remember reading that and thinking, oh, this is possible, is it? And being really blown away by it, and by A Kestrel for a Knave. Again, Yorkshire people can be in books. So my tastes got darker as I got older. But I did study English as well at university. And I'm a massive Janeite.
I know you're a big Jane Austen fan.
Big Jane Austen. Huge. Yeah.
I read that in your autobiography. Yeah, I mean, she is an amazing writer. Great storyteller.
Yes.
Didn't she write the first mystery? The first psychological mystery? Don't people credit her for writing the first psychological?
I did not know that, but as in Northanger Abbey. Oh, wow. Yes, I can see that.
Maybe I'm talking nonsense, but I think that's... You know, we've talked about all this rubbish that we have in the back of our head that's worth nothing. But sometimes if you're...
pluck it out.
I think it was once asked in a pub quiz or something, also one of those quizzes, and I thought, was it? Is she? And then I'm like, okay, yeah, that's probably
true. I can see that, though. I can see that, yeah.
And you, where do you go from Jane Austen? Did you study Jane Austen at university then?
So she was one of the modules that I did, but I also was quite, I mean, my taste is really eclectic. And so at university, I chose very eclectic groups of writers. I did some American literature, some contemporary, some African, I think. And I think we share a perspective on reading.
We do.
Which
the same
is,
taste,
yeah, it's very similar taste. But one of the things I love about Goldsborough is the message about snobbery. I'm just not into this type of book is a better type of book than that type of book.
A story is a story to me, and how you tell it is your, like, I think that literary novels are a genre. But if you're telling me a great story, then I want to read it. But I don't personally want to represent or champion a book that I don't understand, because it's about a point in time that doesn't have a story. Yeah. I don't get enjoyment from that.
I'm absolutely with you on story is what matters to me. And when people say to me, like, who are your favourite writers? So my favourite writers, Jane Austen, Barbara Kingsolver, Marion Keyes. And for me, they are all on exactly the same level for very different reasons.
Yeah. And they're all very different.
Yeah.
And what have you read recently that you absolutely love?
So I keep talking about this, and I sort of wish I wasn't talking about it, because it's terrifying. And people have already shouted at me for making them read it. But it's Night Watching by Tracy Sierra. Have you read it?
Yes.
So I live in the middle of the countryside, not in an old house, but in quite a creaky house. And I've lived there for 5 years. I've never had a sleepless night until I read that book.
I knew where you were going.
While I was reading it, I couldn't sleep. It's one of the most compelling thrillers I've read in a really, really long time. Like, if I was a creative writing tutor, I'd be holding it up as the example of creating tension. I really would.
It is terrific.
Yeah.
And I know that you've said to me you've made friends with everyone that's got a book coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Authors Anonymous for people who need to get for having a book published.
Yeah.
Because it's quite stressful.
It is stressful. I am one of the luckiest people I know. And yet I'm still on the roller coaster. And there are some, I have to say, 2024 is really good for books.
It really is.
And I am lucky enough to be part of a few debut WhatsApp groups where we just kind of talk about, is anyone else worried about this? Or has anybody done this before? And how did you do it? It's just great.
I think it's really wonderful that you're all supporting each other, because
yeah.
I always say never be jealous or ever compare yourself to another author. Only compare yourself to, and I say this as an agent to my clients, just to ease them, because it's very stressful being published. I do understand it.
Yes.
Judge yourself against the last book rather than against another author, because everyone writes different books and everyone's going to have a different journey in their writing career. Every book is very different. Every journey of a book is very different.
I couldn't agree more. And in, you know, in my groups, I've got the Sarah Brooks, The Cautious Traveller's Guide to the Wasteland. Oh, so that's another book I've recently finished. And I've said it was like reading his Dark Materials for the first time.
Yeah.
She is so talented.
Yeah.
Sam Burr, Fellowship of the Puzzle Makers, which just is, I don't want to say a heartwarming book, because that's what everyone says about The List of Suspicious Things.
But it's
really
heart.
Flattering. But it's got, yes, you're right. A better way of describing it is it's got heart. And he's incredibly talented. And
it's like you listen to my podcast where I just said all the great books that are coming out.
So I did listen to that, but I was also cheering, because as well as my book being in, there's the books of people I really like and admire, which is obviously fantastic. But we all are completely different.
Yeah.
Our writing is very different. Our styles are very different. Our focus is very different. And I know from being a bookseller that people come into a store and generally they will look for two or three books at the same time. It's actually really common that people buy in multiples. So there's room for us all. That's
absolutely
kind of how I view it.
Yeah. Now, this is Confessions of a Book Collector, and it's called Confessions of a Book Collector because of my history, and we now are entering the confessional.
Yes. I feel like I need to cross myself. Yes.
And it's about book collecting, so you're quite safe. Are you a book collector?
Yes, I am.
And do you have a large collection of books? And do you have some very special books in your collection that you couldn't do without?
Yes, I am. And yes, I do. I do that thing of, I often read on Kindle or NetGalley. And when I know that I love it, I order a special edition or a hardback.
Really?
And then I don't touch the special edition or hardback. And so my bookcases are pristine. Yeah.
Welcome to my world.
Is that what you do? It's so funny. So illogical.
I know, it's madness. But I read books because I get sent proofs and I get manuscripts from publishers. And so I read them, so I don't need to read them again. But I want to collect those books because they mean something to me, because they've placed me, like I said to you, when I read your book, I know exactly what day it was, I know exactly where I was, because that's what great books do.
Yeah.
And I want to own those books.
Yes.
I have the privilege of being able to champion those books and make a special edition, which I know that you're in our Premier Book Club, and I'm very grateful for that. So you do have some amazing books because you're buying those special editions from Goldsborough. But I also do the same as you. I'll read and then I'll just take my beautiful book. It's all wrapped up and I put it on a bookcase and it doesn't get touched ever again. And I do clean my books, but I dust them and love them and look at them and smell pages, and I'm a weirdo like that.
No.
But anyway, back to you.
I'm with you.
And is there one particular book that you have in your collection where you, if, for example, you had to leave your house and you could only take one book with you, do you have one?
I do, and I won a competition last year, maybe, or the year before, because I had so many editions of it on my shelf that I won a competition, and that's Marion Keyes' Rachel's Holiday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's a great book.
It's an incredible book.
Again, and another one with heart.
100%. And it's one of the best pieces of writing about addiction I've ever read. And I'm a recovering alcoholic, so I've been sober for a really long time. But I read it first in 1997 when I wasn't sober. And it was one of the kind of chinks in my denial of my own issue around alcohol was reading this book. And so it's got a special place in my heart for that reason. But it's also funny, warm, moving, everything I want in a book. And sometimes I think Marion, I think more now she is understood and revered in the way that she always should have been. But I have often felt like her work is misunderstood or minimised. And yet she is
but not
one
by
of
the readers,
great,
because readers by
agreed.
Her. Yeah. I mean, it's back to that snobbery thing, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which I won't get involved in.
No.
And I just, yeah. But because you don't shy away from some of the same things in your book. You talk about those.
Yes.
Those addictions and
yes.
some of those issues,
yes.
mental health and alcoholism. And I think it's really important that we do talk about them.
So it's one of the reasons I wanted to explore those areas in the book is that they are in families, they are in communities. These things happen. And I wanted to write something hopeful despite their appearance in the book, if that makes any sense. So I'm really into writing imperfect people with imperfect lives who still find joy and warmth in life. And yeah, I wanted to make sure that that was reflected in the book and that people were painted as they really are.
Well, the reality.
Yeah.
You do that so well.
Thank you.
I think that's really important. I was talking to my colleague this morning about that, how life can really challenge you, but you have to remain positive or things may affect you. But it's how do you compartmentalize that and still how do you yes. carry on?
Yeah. Yeah. And ultimately, actually, the list of suspicious things is about resilience and hope in the face of difficulty.
I think that's the perfect way to end this podcast.
Fantastic.
Because I couldn't have put it better. And I could speak to you forever.
Mm-hmm.
You're amazing.
Me too.
And I've been so looking forward to meeting you. Again, I just want to tell you, thank you for your book, because I really, really love it. I hope that everyone goes out and buys The List of Suspicious Things by Jenny Godfrey, because I promise you, you're not going to be disappointed. And if you're not a member of Premier Book Club, which is the Goals of Books Premier Book Club, please do have a look at it, because you'll get the most amazing copy, though we do probably have the longest wait list that we've had for a book of the month. So you
wow.
may have to, I know, it is. That's why I think that this is a book that everybody is going to want to read, because I've not seen this before. And I didn't tell you that. I'm sorry, but I didn't tell
no,
you.
No, I love the fact that I'm getting that live information. That's amazing.
But please don't stop trying to get hold of a copy, because I'm sure that there may well be copies, hopefully. But if you don't get it from Goldsboro, just go to your local bookstore or go to wherever you get your books and buy it. And thank you for listening.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for being here. Subscribe now to be one of the first to hear our new series, and follow Goldsboro Books on socials to keep up to date with our latest news and to discover who will be joining me on Confessions of a Book Collector.